All right, good evening, everybody. That was the bell. It is time for us to get started. We are going to be in 1 Kings chapter 1 and 2 as we start out this evening. And we're talking about a character that probably isn't at the forefront of your mind when you're thinking about either major or minor Bible characters, Benaiah. So most of the time, you guys have probably read the Bible, read the story of this story, and it's like, who's Benaiah? And occasionally, you'll hit that when you're reading something and somebody brings a name of the Bible up. You're like, I don't remember that at all. But maybe you remember a little bit about Benaiah, but we're going to learn some about him as we go through our lesson together this evening. But before we begin, let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. God, we are so grateful that you love us. We are so grateful that you show us mercy and grace and that you're patient with us. We're thankful for our chance to be together with our brothers and sisters this evening and to open up your book and to find out how we can emulate these good characters in your word and how we can avoid emulating those in your word who are not worth emulating. We thank you for these real life people, because sometimes examples are the best way for us to learn. And so as we see these people, they are great examples for us, and help us learn the lessons that you would have us to learn tonight from these people. Through Jesus we pray, amen. All right, so we've already talked a little bit about a few characters that were foundational or in center, front and center in the story of David leaving town. You know, I told you that I was listening to somebody said, no one's life in the scripture is better supplemented and brought more to life by the minor characters in his life than the story of David. And there are all, you could probably, the whole quarter probably could have been characters in David's lives, people who influenced David and had a part in David's life, would have been a very interesting course in and of itself. But today, we already talked about Ittai the Gittite, and we talked about Ahithophel. Now we're going to talk about Benaiah. Benaiah was one of David's mighty men. He had a list of 30 men who were classified as David's mighty men. They were called the 30, but when you count them out in the list, there's like 37 of them. So either the number was never meant to be exact 30. You know, the Big Ten probably has 27 schools in it right now. Got two new schools from the West Coast. So it could be something like that. Or it could be like Uriah's on the list, and Uriah was murdered at the hand of David, really, and somebody could have replaced Uriah. So there could have been some guys who died that were a part of the list, and so new guys went on the list to replace those guys. But these were incredible warriors. There were three that were at the top, and Benaiah is right under those things, right under those three. So he didn't make it to the top three, but he made it right under the top three. He was captain of David's bodyguards. And so he was the guy that was responsible for David's safety. A couple of interesting things that he did, it said that he fought an Egyptian, a man who was a spectacular man. Okay, he fought this guy. He had a spear, and Benaiah only had a club. So he goes up to this spectacular Egyptian, takes the spear out of his hand, and kills him with his own spear. He is known as the guy who went down into a pit and killed a lion on a snowy day. So I don't know, sometimes you're like, why is that in there? Why is all those details are in there? But it has to be there for a reason. It's a description of Benaiah. And it says he killed two lion-like fighters from Moab. So, I mean, he's just right up there as someone who was a mighty man of war. He was over two groups of people that left with David right before they announced that the Gittites left and Ittai was with them. So he had been with David for quite a while. It goes all the way back to the beginning of 1 Samuel, and there's a lot of things that we might talk about later, that events in David's life that he would have witnessed firsthand that did prepare him to be the kind of person he was. But in 1 Kings chapter 1, David is getting old, and he must have some kind of a circulatory problem because he can't get warm. And so all of his servants come and bring him blankets, and they give him more blankets, they give him more blankets, didn't get warm at all. And so one of his servants has this bright idea, let's get a young virgin girl to come and wait on him, and when he gets cold, she can lie in the bed with him to warm him up. So that's what they did. Her name is Abishag, and that's going to come up later in just a moment. So that was her task. David was an old man, she waited on him, and when he got cold, she would lie down with him to help warm him up. Well, Adonijah, one of David's sons, he is the fourth son. He is one of the six sons that was born in Hebron or Hebron. And the two of his oldest brothers are dead. All right. Amnon is dead. Joab killed him. Absalom killed him, and then Absalom is dead. Joab killed him. So those two are dead. The second son was a son of Abigail, and we don't know much about him at all. We don't know if he died at a young age, which might be the case, or maybe his mother was wise enough to say, hey, you're staying out of this fray, okay? You're just going to have your own life. You're not going to worry about being king, because that's all trouble. I don't know what the case is, but he never tried to become king. We don't really have anything. So now you would think he's the guy that should be king in the list of possible kings. And so he grows a little impatient, and so he decides to declare himself king while David is still alive. One of the first things he does is goes to Joab, he's the commander of the army. If I'm going to take over from David, the best guy for me to get on my side is Joab. And although Joab didn't go with Absalom, he does go with Adonijah. Then he goes and finds one of the two high priests, and he gets that high priest to follow after him. And he gets all of David's sons to meet him, except Solomon. And he calls everybody together to anoint himself king, except Nathan, Zadok, the other high priest. Those aren't there. Benaiah is not one that he calls to help him. Neither are the 30 mighty men. So other than that, everybody goes to this ceremony where he anoints himself king. He does the same thing that Absalom did. He gets chariots and horsemen to go before him wherever he goes, and 50 runners, all right? 50 people that would run before the new king to announce he's coming. It's sort of like maybe the limousines when the president comes by, right? You know all those SUVs coming with the black limousines. You know somebody important is coming next. So wherever he goes, 50 guys and some horses and some chariots go out before him. So he does everything possible to make himself king. Nathan finds out about this, and Nathan is upset, one, because he doesn't know anything about it, two, because if David does plan this, then he's sort of insulted. David didn't ask me about this. So he goes to Bathsheba and says to Bathsheba, look, what Adonijah is doing. He has pronounced himself king, and all the people are at his house right now saying, long live Adonijah, long live King Adonijah. This is going to not be good for you, because when David dies, he's going to probably kill you and Solomon. Because he didn't invite you guys, right? You're out. You're not on the A-list, so you guys are in some serious trouble. And so he comes up with this plan. He says, here's what we're going to do. You go to David. You tell him exactly what's taking place here. And then when you start telling him what Adonijah and everybody's doing, I'll come in behind you and I'll confirm everything you said. So now David will have two witnesses that all this is happening and he'll have to make a decision. So they carry out that plan. Bathsheba goes in there before David and says, you swore to me by your Lord that you are going to make Solomon king. Do you not know that Adonijah has declared himself king and all the people are following after him? All of Israel, they're looking to you right now to know what you're going to do next. And so as she's still speaking, here comes Nathan. And Nathan says, repeats the same thing. And so now he has the confirmation that this is really happening. When Nathan comes in, it's sort of interesting. Bathsheba must have left because it says that he calls for her to come back. And so she comes back in the room and David says, as the Lord lives, this very day, Solomon will be anointed king. So he calls his people together, Nathan, Benaiah, Zadok, and he says, this is what I want you to do. I want you to get my donkey. I want you to saddle it up, put Solomon on my donkey, take him out, take some oil with you, take all my servants, and you anoint him king. And after you anoint him king, I want you to bring him back on my mule, and I want you to put him on my throne. All right? And then when you announce he's king, blow the trumpet and shout, long live Solomon, King Solomon. So that's exactly what they do. And when they do that, they're close enough in proximity for Joab and all the people at the house, Adonijah's house, anointing him king to hear it. And so Joab's like, what in the world's going on there? And so Jonathan, one of the priest's sons, comes into the house and Adonijah's like, oh, you're a good man. You're here with good news, right? He goes, no, I'm not here with good news. I'm here with some really bad news. They just anointed Solomon king. And all the people are shouting, long live King Solomon, long live King Solomon. He's on David's throne right now. David has bowed down to him and appointed him king. And so all the guests couldn't get out of that house fast enough, okay? They say, this is all bad news for us. We don't want anybody to know we were here at the house. And so they all scatter and they go home. All right, so this is all bad news. Now, Adonijah doesn't go home. Adonijah goes to the tabernacle, and he goes into the tabernacle, and he grabs onto the horns of the altar. And he goes, I'm not leaving here until I get word from Solomon that he's not going to do me any harm. And so Solomon sends word and says, as long as you're an upright man and you don't do anything else, I'm not going to do you any harm. Not one hair of your head will be harmed in any way. So he goes his way. And so when David is getting closer to death, in chapter 2, he calls Solomon in. He says, there's a few loose ends that you might need to tie up. First of all, he gives him some really good advice. He says, you need to be a man. And part of being a man is doing what God says with a loyal and good heart. So that is the good advice that he gives Solomon as he starts out his kingship. He says, but there's a couple loose ends that I need tied up from my life. First of all, Joab is ruthless. I mean, he is an evil man. He has killed two commanders of the army in peacetime as if it were wartime. And these men were innocent. They didn't deserve to die. And it was personal with Joab because it says that he stained his belt and his shoes with their blood. All right, so he wasn't like shooting an arrow or throwing a spear. He was hand to hand with these guys, killing them in close contact. It was personal with him. And he was those two examples, plus what he did to me. I think that has to be a reference to what he did in killing Absalom when David said, be kind to my son Absalom. So he did that and he killed these other two guys. Use your wisdom. But don't let his gray hair go down to the grave in peace. All right? So you don't let him die peacefully. Figure out how you're going to do it, but don't let him die peacefully. And then he says, the sons of a man who helped me when I left, be kind to them, because they gave me some good resources as I was leaving your brother. And then he tells them some other people that he has to take care of. Who is the other one that he has to take care of? Shimei, the guy who hurled all those insults at David as David's leaving. He goes, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue, as he's jumping up there and making a big scene. Abishai wants to kill him. Joab's brother wants to kill him right then and there. And David's like, no, you're not going to kill him. And he's speaking for the Lord. The Lord is sending me out of here this day. So he's speaking for the Lord. And so you take care of him however you see fit. Use your wisdom to take care of him. So, we have what happens when all of this takes place. First of all, Adonijah goes in to Bathsheba, and she goes, I have a request. First of all, Bathsheba goes, friend or foe, are you here for good things or bad things? I'm here for good things. All right, what do you need? I'm going to make a request for you, give it to me. She goes, I'll give it to you. I want you to go ask your son Solomon. And it's interesting the way he words this. He says, Solomon, I was supposed to be the king. You know, everything turned so fast. I was the king momentarily. Everything turned. Now Solomon's king. The Lord gave it to him. But then he asked, I would like to marry Abishai. And so Bathsheba goes to Solomon and says, you know, he wants to marry Abishai. And he goes, not a chance. Abishag. No, Abishag. There's too many names. Sorry. It's not good. Because if you marry a concubine of the king, it's like trying to take over his kingdom. It's like saying, look what I've done. I have the king's family. Now I'm in charge. And so he has him executed. Who does he ask to execute him? Benaiah. And Benaiah goes out and executes him. You have Joab. Joab finds out what's going on. He runs to the tabernacle. He holds on to the altar. And so Solomon says, go kill him. So Benaiah is who he says, go kill him. Benaiah goes to the temple and says, hey, Solomon wants you dead. Come out of there. And he says, I'm not coming out. And so he goes back to Solomon and says, he refuses to come out. What do I do? He goes, go in the tabernacle and kill him where he is. And so you think about this for a second. he was actually Benaiah's boss at one point. He was the commander of all the army. Joab was, right? Now Joab goes into the tabernacle with his sword, looks his boss in the eyes, his former boss in the eyes, and executes him right then and there. And then with Shimei, the guy who was yelling the insults, okay? He gave him a special request. He goes, here's the deal for you. If you come to Jerusalem, build your house in Jerusalem, and stay in Jerusalem and never leave, I'll let you live. And the guy says, that sounds like a pretty good deal. So he comes, he builds a house in Jerusalem. He lives there a couple years later. He finds out some of his slaves have left. They've escaped. And so he goes to Gath, gets his slaves, and comes back to Jerusalem. When he comes back to Jerusalem, Solomon says, come here, you know, come up to the palace. I got something to talk to you about. He goes, how dare you leave Jerusalem? You accepted this deal that I gave you, a very merciful deal, and you leave. And so he had Benaiah execute him as well. So there are three executions that Benaiah carries out on behalf of Solomon, and really at least two of them are on behalf of David. So it's a very interesting story, small little tidbits that he's doing this, but I think there's a lot of good things that we can learn. So I don't know that I have, you have the microphone, John? All right, we've got a couple microphone runners there. So if you have anything you'd like to answer question number one, what life experiences prepared Benaiah to be able to, one, be the person that Solomon could count on, that David could count on, and then that Solomon could count on to carry out these very unpleasant orders, right? I mean, who would want to do this? I don't think he had delight in doing this, but this is something he was requested to do. So if you have anything for question number one, go ahead and raise your hand, and one of those microphones will get to you. And before I forget, the questions for Sunday are on the table in the back as you leave. So those, Brian has those ready for you. He's not feeling well. He's not here tonight, but he has those ready for you. All right, Herb.
Well, you basically already answered it, but it is his fearless fighting. I mean, his absolutely courageous attitude to do whatever needed to be done to face what, you know, lions or heroes or whatever, he just absolutely fearless.
Yeah, so that's a character trait that I think is worth emulating, but it didn't come just at the moment, right? It took a lot of preparing to get there. So all through his life, he was willing to do some of those very difficult things that other people might not be willing to do. Mike?
To punish Joab in his own lifetime.
He has to pass it on. I never thought that was admirable.
Okay.
He killed his son. And he killed his other people. David knew
all of that, yet David did nothing.
Yes, and that's not unusual for David, to do nothing. Even when Absalom killed Amnon, right? What did David do? David didn't. Well, first of all, when he raped his sister, David did nothing.
Yes.
And then when he just kicked him out for a while, he was sort of gentle and all that. And even in our text, it says that when he was, I think Tim has his hand up. When Adonijah was getting the chariots and the horsemen and the runners to go, he was making the first steps to take over kingdom. It says David didn't do anything, so David could have stopped that earlier. And so we do see. A man, David is probably the most complex man in the entire Bible, right? Because you see this man who's not afraid to have people executed. And when the guy who killed Saul, you know, kill him like that. You know, he's not afraid to do that. It just seems like, especially when it's an Israelite, he doesn't want to execute. He doesn't want to kill. And so there is this character, maybe this character flaw in David, that he is passive sometimes when he needs to be aggressive. And then he is sort of passing the buck to his son. Anybody have a comment? You can raise your hand and have a comment and he'll get the microphone to you. Tim?
I was going to say that his father was a priest, so he grew up in some of this. He was a valiant man. His life experience started there. He certainly was somebody who was connected, if you would. Not only that, we read about these tales, they're very parallel. If you think about it, he kills this lion. I know someone else who killed a lion. He right. kills an Egyptian who's over 7 foot tall, who's a giant of a man, you know, with in a very odd way. So there's those parallels. He probably could connect with David on killing giants and lions and bears and stuff like that. It's there is a parallel there. They're very similar men in that regard. So they probably connected.
They probably had a good bond, a good automatic relationship. Hey, you know, and this is, we talked about this with Jonathan and David, right? When Jonathan sees David come out and kill the giant, Jonathan had similar experiences when he went to the Philistines and said, the Lord can save by many or by few. And when he saw David, there was this kindred spirit there of faith. And so when Benaiah and David start building this relationship, it's built on this common ground of, hey, you know, I killed a lion too. You know, you killed some giant, I killed a giant. So there's has this commonality there. Yes, ma'am.
One thing that Benaiah has seen in his life is David was the king's anointed, Saul was the king's anointed, and Solomon's the king's anointed, and he is a true believer in God, and he's not going to go with Adonijah because he knew that God didn't anoint him, and he's going to take care of God's anointed. I think that gives him another reason why he can follow Solomon's orders, not only to be brave, but he knows Solomon was anointed by God and that this is probably coming from God.
Yeah, he's a big believer. What he says to, when David says Solomon is going to be king, he's like, may it be so, and may the Lord bless the son of my Lord, and may the son of my Lord's throne be greater than him. So he had in that, and I find this very interesting in that comment, is that who's he in the presence of? A prophet and a priest. And yet he's the one that speaks up. You know, I find that, you know, out of all those people that speak up, you wouldn't think it would be Benaiah, but when he hears the news that David is going to anoint Solomon king, he's the one that speaks up and says, amen, let it be so. And I'm all in. I find that to be interesting about him. His character was that way. So he knew what it meant to be the Lord's anointed. He knew it wasn't Adonijah, so he wasn't going out to Adonijah. And he knew that it was Solomon, so he was going to follow Solomon's orders. All right, anybody else have any lessons, any life experiences that would help him? Like I said, he comes on the scene fairly early in David's life, so there's a lot of things that he saw David do and David live. It says he comes on in 2 Samuel chapter 8. So in 2 Samuel chapter 9, he sees David show mercy to Jonathan's son, right? David looking to be able to fulfill his promise to him, so that had to stick out to him as something special. He worked under Joab. Do you think he learned anything about executing people and from Joab? Yeah, I mean, he learned how this was. And I think sort of a lesson that you learn later in this is Joab meets his end in sort of a cowardly way. I mean, he killed people in deceptive ways, you know, hugging them, stabbing them, and all that good stuff. But he was not willing, he did not want to go the way of, you know, dying the way that he did. But I think he had to learn something about that. His relationship with David predated Bathsheba. So he saw how David handled that, not so good, but how David was still in God's favors. He also, in 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 18, when it says who he was and his position in leadership, it mentions there that David's sons were chief ministers. So he probably worked pretty close with the older ones of David's sons and knew what kind of scoundrels they were. Right? He probably knew that Adonijah was a scoundrel, knew that Absalom was a scoundrel, and didn't want to follow them because, you know, David had 6 sons when he was just king over Judah. And he was king over Judah and Hebron for 7 years or 7.5 years and king over the entire nation for 33 years. So there's probably quite a bit of age difference because Solomon is, the 4th son of David and Bathsheba. So he's not the oldest son of David and Bathsheba that lived. Of course, we know the one that died. And so even in that family, he was chosen when it's out of order. But he would have been around for all of that stuff. He would have seen, probably would have seen, maybe not, Absalom killed Joab killed Absalom. I'm getting so confused at who kills who. All right, so you know how Joab killed Absalom the way he did when David said, "Don't do it." And so he may have seen all that stuff. So I think all of those things that he saw firsthand, being in the in crowd, the third, David's bodyguard, right? The chief of David's bodyguard. He saw how David lived day in and day out. And sometimes that's how you best can judge someone's character, not by moments, but by every day. And so he saw how he worked every single day, and he had, that's the Lord's anointed, I'm following after him. And if he says Solomon is the Lord's anointed, and David makes a huge statement saying that God chose Solomon. I didn't choose Solomon, God chose Solomon. So he would have believed all of that. Anything else, question number one? All right, question number two then. What character traits do you see in, oops, I forgot to change Ittai. How did I do that? Benaiah, that are worth imitating or not worth imitating. We looked at this idea of fearless. Herb brought up this, he was fearless. You know, he fear stops most of us from doing things, right? Fear is the one thing that we, you know, don't take chances and risk and do things that we should probably do because we're afraid, and he doesn't seem to have any of that. He was pretty fearless. All right, raise your hand. You've had 4 days to think about this. Well, one of the same traits as Ittai, he was loyal. And he was loyal to the right person and the right people. He was loyal to God, and he was loyal to God's anointed. And so I think this idea of his loyalty and that statement, I'll read that statement to you. It says, I don't have it. It's in 1 Kings chapter 1, 36 and 37, where he gives all, I will follow the Lord's anointed, if it's the Lord's anointed. Mary, go ahead.
I also noticed that He followed the line of God's anointed kings. David had been anointed. Adonijah exalted himself, and he did that prayer as you mentioned. You know, may it be so. He was, that showed his faith in God.
And so we have faith in God. That's, yes, a good one.
Uh-huh. He didn't get carried away with Adonijah's self-promotion. And the other thing was he did lead those two groups of men. He was a leader because they followed him without question.
Yeah, so it's sort of like Ittai. He had been a leader already. So he knew how to lead. And one of the great things you find in both of these men that I think is a good lesson for us, great leaders usually were great followers first and still are great followers, because no one hardly ever is the top guy, right? The top dog. But here in both of these guys' cases, yeah, they were leaders. It's sort of like the centurion who says, I know how leadership works, to Jesus. I know you can just say the word and my servant's going to be healed. I can say to some guy, go, and he's going to do it. I know you can do the same, Jesus. So he was sort of subjecting himself to Jesus, knowing who Jesus was. But I think these two guys show the same thing. Good leaders oftentimes come from good followers, and good leaders are oftentimes still good followers. They realize they have to be good followers as well. What else? Anything about lessons we can learn from Benaiah? I think one thing that we need the microphone up here. I think one thing that we overlook sometimes, and I think in our culture, this word, and we don't have any junior high or high school kids in here, so nobody snicker at this word. Dutiful, all right? Doing your duty is something that we don't elevate to being an important character trait. But everybody needs to do what they're responsible for doing. And sometimes those mundane or unpleasant duties that we have to do are important to do. And you don't want to do them. You probably, I don't think he had the character that took delight in killing Joab or any of those people, but he knew it was what was expected of him. And it was giving it was a lawful command by the guy who was anointed king by God. And so he was going to do it. And he wasn't going to ask any questions about it. He was just going to do what God wanted him to do. And I think that they're having the character trait of doing what you're supposed to do and what your responsibility is something. You know, when I did work for Aldi's, when I hired somebody, I told them this. Never, ever, ever say anything that you're asked to do is not your job. because everything is your job. I mean, everything's my job. If the bathrooms are dirty, I'll clean them. I'll take my suit jacket off and I'll clean them. There's just nothing that you can be asked to do that's not part of your responsibility to make this store successful. And I think Benaiah had that attitude. Randy?
I mean, they were real. And when you read about them, I think it makes you feel like a wimp. No, they, like you said, they were fearless. And I think one of the traits I see in somebody like Benaiah is that
he knew the little leaven, leaven's the whole lump, and that you need to get rid of that or it will just be so destructive that he was then fearless and went and did it, even though it was a difficult task.
Yep.
I think we have a lot of problems in society today because our leaders are not fearless like this, and they won't take on evil when they see it and force it to back down. We've got too many people who waver in the wind.
Yeah, these guys we're talking about, they're manly men, okay? They did what men were supposed to do, even when what men were supposed to do isn't very pleasant. To protect the culture, to protect the families, to protect the people of God. And they weren't afraid to go out and get their hands dirty and do what God expects them to do. Debbie?
I was just decisive. Again, there's no wavering. You know, he told them to do it.
Yeah.
Consider it done.
Yeah.
You know, all of us, you just hear them waving the banner in the name of the Lord and for my King, it's done. And it's just, you know, it's very stirring. It's very encouraging. I think when I was reading about all of Benaiah, I kept thinking, like, he's kind of like a, you know, a Navy SEAL. He just can do anything.
Yeah, that's a good equivalent. And Well, first of all, we have no arguments by him. He doesn't go to Solomon. Are you sure you want to kill him? You know, I don't, man, it's sort of messy. He's in the tabernacle. I don't know if God's going to like that. There's none of that asking questions. And do you think Solomon had any second thoughts of whether or not he was going to get the job done or not? No. I mean, Benaiah wasn't the kind of guy that Solomon, when he left, Solomon was like, I wonder if he's going to carry through on that. You think I should send somebody back behind him to make sure he actually kills Joab? You know, I'm just not sure. It wasn't anything like that. I mean, he knew that, hey, Benaiah's going to take care of that. And if you are a leader, how great is it to have somebody under your authority that if you give them a task, regardless of what the task is like, you know it's going to get done, right? You just know it's going to get done. You don't have to double check all the time. You just know it's going to get done. That's sort of what Benaiah was like. Tim?
One of the things I read that I thought was interesting that kind of explained his character a little bit is they said, think of him like he would be the leader of the Secret Service. You know, and I think that's a good example. Think about what his job is and how, have you met a person that was the head of the Secret Service that protected our president, even though maybe our leaders might not be strong? Those men are very focused on their job and everything like that. I thought that was an interesting thing I read, though. Think of them, of the traits and the characteristics you would have to be in that position, because that's the position he was in.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about taking a bullet, taking an arrow, taking a spear. You're willing to do that. That's the job that you sign up for. I did know a Secret Service agent one time. He was, his very first day, he was driving the dummy car, and Johnson got in. So he actually had Johnson in the car, and it was his very first day, and he was supposed to be the dummy car, and here is the president getting in my car. So he was a very decisive man, and he didn't talk about it too much, but he had those character traits. All right, what are some practical ways we can emulate some of these good character traits that we've talked about? All right, I think I'm on the right screen. All right, Herb has one.
If it's okay, I'm going to answer 2 and 3 because it seems to work for me. But he was willing to call out people who were in the wrong, and he was willing to back up and justify and praise whoever was doing right. And it didn't matter. He didn't worry about risking his own personal safety or his own character. He just called it out. And so I think the thing that we can emulate is that we can speak up when we see something where something's unjustified, or whether something's doing right, and you know, say this is good. We're glad we're doing this, or to say no, you know, we don't need to be doing this. This is wrong, and so to speak up and not worry what the ramifications are for ourselves.
Okay. Yeah. When you see good things happening, praise those. When you see bad things happening, step in and say, hey, this is not the way this is supposed to happen. And I put that down. Sometimes we have to look unpleasant responsibilities straight in the eye and do what God tells us to do. You know, and those aren't fun. Discipline your kids. It's not fun, right? It's not something that you want to do. You know, your parents always used to say, this hurts me more than it hurts you, and you never believed them, and you had kids, and you still don't believe that. Anyway. It's a terrible thing to have to discipline your kids, but sometimes that's what you have to do. Sometimes we have to confront sin. That's never easy. Another lesson that I put down here, sometimes our roles are the roles in the kingdom that get your hands dirty. And that's a good role. Somebody has to play those roles. So every role in the kingdom is a good role to play. Benaiah was never going to be king. Now, he knew that. He was never going to be part of the king's family. He was going to be, he's the king's servant. He's the king's bodyguard. And so he's going to do the best he can to be the king's bodyguard. And he did. He played that role perfectly. And I think that's a lesson we can learn regardless, you know, the Bible talks about this in different applications, right? Especially the body. Whatever part of the body you are, do your part of the body the best you can. And I think Benaiah just shows us how that works in real life. You know, if somebody says you, hey, I need you to do this, then you just do it. And they shouldn't have any qualms about knowing that's going to be there. And I said the other one I have is be faithful in whatever responsibilities God gives you, big or small. Benaiah didn't come to bring himself to be right under the three, right? By not doing the small things all along the way to show that he was worth being. I mean, you're not put in charge of things like this unless you've proven yourself ready for those tasks. So he had to have proven himself ready for those tasks all along. So always, for me, be faithful in the small things that I'm supposed to be doing, and then maybe the Lord will give me more responsibility. The Bible talks about that even with our financial being. You know, if you're faithful with the small things, then you'll be faithful with great. All right, what did we learn about God? We have a few minutes. One, God fulfills his promises. You look at this. When he kills the priest, it says in there, this was a fulfillment of the prophecy he gave to Eli. That was years ago. He told Eli, because you have not done what you're supposed to do with your sons, you've allowed them to make a mockery out of the sacrifices, and you have not restrained them. I told you I would give you the priesthood forever. And there's a lesson here too. But because you haven't fulfilled your part of the commitment, I'm taking that back. You know, and I'm just telling you, all your young people are going to die in the flower of their age. There's not going to be an old man in your family. They're all going to die young. When Saul goes to Nob and kills all the priests there, he has the Edomite kill him. Remember? That's all Eli's family. The only one that escapes is Abiathar, and he's killed here. And now Zadok is the only high priest. They weren't supposed to have two anyway. And then this is a fulfillment of God, what God said years ago, I'm going to take care of this, Eli, because of what you did. And there's lessons with that as well. Sometimes our kids and grandkids might either have good things or bad things based upon decisions that we make. And that's always an important thing to learn. Herb?
Especially in the church, if we look around, there's going to be somebody standing for what's right. I realize there are times when people get led astray, and in the case of Benaiah, he did what was right, and he was there for David, and David was doing what was right, and Benaiah was there for him. So if we're willing to stand up and say this is what we need to do, there's others going to stand with us. But God will put people there to stand with us if we just look for them.
Very good, very good. Another one that I have here is God often chooses people that men do not choose. You find this when David is saying, I mean, Solomon really had no right to the throne except the only right that really mattered. God said he's going to get it, right? And so he wasn't the next oldest. He had three older brothers that were alive other than him that were his full brothers. And so there were others that could have been king. But what David says in 1 Chronicles 28 and verse 4, however, the Lord of Israel chose me above all my house, all the house of my father to be king over Israel forever. That's familiar, right? God doesn't always choose who man chooses. For he has chosen Judah to be the ruler. And of the house of Judah, he chose the house of my father. And out of the house of my father, he chose me. He was pleased with me to make me king over all Israel. And of all my sons, the Lord has given me many sons. He has chosen my son Solomon to sit on my throne. So God doesn't always choose the people that make the most sense. He chooses the people that he sees able to do that. If something is God's plan, don't fight against it. You know, it's not going to work in your favor. Just know, if you know it's God's plan, you're going to have to do it. You know, you follow God's plan. All right. Let me see. I'm not supposed to go over because the kids won't come out. Let me see. I think we see from Solomon, we do see wisdom in Solomon before he asked for wisdom. All these accounts where he's giving grace and saying, live in Jerusalem, or he's saying, you know, as long as you don't do anything bad, I won't kill you. And when all that was wisdom that he had even before he asked for that extra wisdom.